Hello, everyone, and welcome to Between Two Coaches. We're on a mission to make fitness more human, snark sold separately. And on today's show, we're chatting about all things comparison culture. But before we do that, we got to talk to you about listener love, because that's what's coming on your next episode. You want to give them a little bit more about listener love, Coach Nick?
Yeah, hi, I'm Coach Nick. And this is Between Two Coaches, and we're excited to have you here. And so our first segment always is going to be something called Listener Love. So we're going to kind of have a segment where we give some love to listeners, whether it's a review or a comment or just some nice thing that someone said. We want to share it with you guys. And so if you have questions or things like that, we'll answer it here. And so for this week, we wanted to, since this is our first episode, and we wanted you guys to get to know us a little bit, we're going to just have a question we teed up, which is, how did we get started in the fitness world? So why don't you get started, Coach Amanda?
That sounds good. So we're giving each other love today. So this is Coach Love right now. This is a special segment called Coach Love. So how did I get started in the fitness space? So I've been a full-time fitness professional for about 7 years. Prior to that, I worked in government and nonprofit management. I was the director of communications for a nonprofit organization, and I pivoted to fitness because I really found love for it in a group fitness setting. Shortly after, I figured that I would try out cycling as an opportunity for me. So I auditioned at several studios. I went through all my certifications. Prior to the auditions, of course. We like a credentialed professional.
We do.
And bringing you to present day, I'm not only a full-time certified run coach, personal trainer, but also a group fitness instructor at Equinox here in New York City.
We love that. We love New York City.
Yes, we do. What about you, Coach Nick? How'd you get started in the fitness world?
So I started running in high school and then college, and took about 8 years off. And we moved from New Jersey to Maryland, because I also have a government job, which I still have, doing software engineering and project management. And I came down here and started running again, just as a way to get back to the only kind of fitness routine I sort of had. And from 2010 till now, it's been there 14 years of just enjoying running. You know, making friends, community is so important to me with running. I've met wonderful people like you through running, and
He's talking to me, guys.
Yes. And so just, you know, I eventually in 2018 started becoming a coach, and, you know, work for a company called Lift Run Perform. And so I've been coaching with them for about almost 5 years. So that's been a wonderful joy for my life, and just loving being in the fitness space. I've been through a journey, and we'll talk about it, in the fitness world, from being a D1 competitive athlete to, you know, less that competitive and less that all in approach as an adult with kids, and found more success. So yeah, that's sort of how I found my fitness world, but it's been fun. I love it. I love running. It makes me happy every day. Lifting anything, moving my body is a fun experience.
I think it's so cool that both of us, although got into it for very different reasons, I was a late bloomer runner. I didn't start running until my late 20s, but we both love the community aspect of it, even though it's a solo sport, right? We're such a tight-knit community, and I love that we found our little pocket on the internet and then IRL in real life.
Yeah, it's like, you know, and I started on team sports. So for me, it was like, while I was in my head doing my own race, you know, you did all your runs with teammates. And, you know, when I started again, I met a running group and ran with them. So, you know, running's been this community to me. I've met friends. I met my wife through becoming a runner, you know, have friends who now are friends with my wife through running. And then they have kids, and I have kids, and our kids are friends. So like, running's just given back so much to me, more than just numbers on a clock.
I love that. And I think we're going to talk more today about the numbers on the clock and the metrics around running, right? In our comparison culture topic today. But Before we get there, can I talk to you about my latest grievance?
You absolutely can.
Okay, so guys, this is a segment called That's That Bullshit. Okay, where we talk about things that are fitness and not fitness related that are giving us a little ick. It's a little irritating, okay? And so as of recent, I find myself a little irritated with the self-checkout line at stores. Do you know what I'm talking about here, Nick?
It's the worst. You know, it used to be great because no one used it and I could sort of roll through. I'd get in there and have my four items. I'd click real quick and I'd be out before like the clerk could even come over. And now since it's the only line available, it is just backed up. No one knows how to use anything. And I'm just like, can I get out of here? Can I just give you money and leave? How can I do this? I'll just order it online from the line.
This is my point. And I'm approaching it in a couple of ways. One, it's like, I feel like the self-checkout was supposed to alleviate the lives of our fine, fierce cashiers and customer support staff. I feel like it was in part supposed to do that. But it was also supposed to make us feel like we had some sort of control over checking out and getting out of the store. But what I would like instead is, why don't we pay our customer service, our cashiers, a livable wage? Let's do that, okay? Because otherwise I'm going to ask you that you pay me for my trauma of trying to check myself out every time I get to CVS, Duane Reade, Whole Foods, and I'm always behind somebody who is just learning how to use their hands that day. Always never used the self-checkout before. I am always behind that gentleman, that ma'am. So fortunately, it's a very small problem to have, but that's that bullshit for me today.
Yeah, that's that bullshit. We love it. All right. So are we ready to talk about today's topic, which is the comparison culture and the comparison trap that exists in fitness everywhere in the world? It's just a phenomenon that just plagues us and makes us feel like we're never good enough.
I think we are. So what do we think contributes to folks playing the comparison game and finding themselves, quote unquote, stuck in the comparison trap?
Yeah, for me, I feel like a lot of people start in anything and they don't know, right? And so it's very easy sometimes in the beginning to not get stuck with anything. You're trying something new, you're learning your way, you're probably having some relative success because you don't expect it early on. And so you sort of just do whatever. And then you get to a point where all of a sudden, you know, you're finding your way, you're finding your groove. And now it's, well, what's everyone else doing? What does everyone else look like? Why is everyone else running this way or exercising this way? And then we start comparing, right? And we start leaning on others to, oh, well, if they're doing it that way, am I doing it wrong? Even though it's been successful for me to date, most people, even when they're having success, still all of a sudden start doubting themselves because that's what we do when we compare, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think what you're speaking to is like, there are so many channels now that we have so much access to that feed into the comparison trap, right? So it's like, we know as coaches that metrics aren't a requirement for being successful in fitness. A wearable is not needed. Strava is not needed. You know, posting your stats on Instagram is not needed. Signing up for a race to feel successful, to feel accomplished, to know that your fitness is improving isn't needed. But there are benefits to these things, right? It's very trackable. It's very tangible. Do you find that with your athletes and with yourself?
I do. And so, you know, I come from an age where we, when I was running in 2000, like early 2000, all we had is a watch to have time, right? And so I would do a run and I would, the only way I would know how far it was is if I took my car and drove it and measured it with my pedometer. And of course I would do that because why wouldn't I? I'm a runner. But, you know, I didn't really know otherwise what a run was, what a pace was or anything. We just ran, right? And so, you know, you knew in the track when you did workouts, but, you know, and then we graduated to college and then, you know, again, paper logs was where all my logs were. I still have all my paper logs. And then, you know, there became a culture of like the first online training log I remember was something called, I used to use Running to Win, it was called, and you would just go on there and you just put in a number and you'd write, like, people would write stories about their run because you could all connect. But like the data wasn't coming from any device. It was just you. So you'd write 10 miles and you'd write whatever you want in there and people would read it and they'd be like, whoa, or, you know, and then we always used to joke as our friends that like people had ghost miles because miles they wouldn't put in there. So like they were training more than they would. So, you know, even comparison culture existed in the other way where people were like hiding training, you know, as a way to get an edge on competition. So yeah, it's always been around. I see it with my athletes all the time where it's, you know, they, even if they're having success, it's either the biggest comparison is always to yourself, right? You know, everyone has a journey of some other point. And, you know, when I used to be successful, I did this, or when I was younger, I did this, or, and that's like the hardest one for people because they can't, it's hard to accept where you're at in your life and be okay with that versus like thinking, okay, well, this is how I had success before. Even if my life's more chaotic or I have all these other things going on, it doesn't matter. I need to do that same thing. And that's the one I work through the most with athletes, helping them convince themselves that like, it doesn't have to look like it always did. It can look different because your life is different. And we're not comparing apples to apples. We're comparing two different times.
Yeah. What you just hit upon reminded me of where that fine line is. And I find this also with my clients, runners, non-runners. It's where, if is this data helpful or is it harmful? Is it impacting your mental health in a way that makes you feel less than? Then that's when we have to really figure out if that metric is something we should be focused on or even looking at, right? For me, a lot of my runners, and it's because of social media, honestly, are obsessed with zone two and obsessed with a metric that often is captured through a wrist based monitor, which we know is pretty inaccurate, right? They're obsessed with hitting certain heart rate zones and that being defined as, oh, this is easy because I'm in this heart rate zone versus like, hey, were you able to potentially hold a conversation during this time? Maybe we should go out without your watch next time. And that's like a very scary thing for folks.
Yeah.
And I think that's what's so wonderful about running and fitness is that it is so quantifiable. And so, but it's also what is potentially harmful to the individual.
Yep. But it's like you can have fun and you can train, right? And so like that's the thing that I think people struggle with. It's like, well, I have to be defined by something and fun isn't means I'm not trying, right? And so how do I describe this moment? How do I describe this effort? Well, it has to be hard, it has to hurt. Or I can use these metrics that, you know, and zone two is something that sort of bothers me too, because, you know, forget that every GPS watch has their own way of creating zones. Forget that heart rate data isn't necessarily the standard thing you see all the time at 210 minus your age, right? That you, if you get a heart rate test done, yeah, sure, that data is accurate. Good, go with that, right? If you don't and you're just using your watches, well, each watch does it differently. Some, there's a zone three model, there's a zone five model, there's a zone seven model. Which zone should you be in, right? So, again, we're just adding a lot of unnecessary things on top of ourselves. And I think people find that instead of relying on how they feel and how they're doing, it's more about, okay, well, how do I make sure it's right, make sure it's done in the right way, you know, and that's where the numbers and the comparisons come in.
Absolutely. And I think for myself, I don't know about you, but if you've ever found yourself in that position where you've what was like any sort of comparison games that you had with yourself. But for me personally, I remember the transitions that happened with my body physically once I started to lift heavier, and how I was comparing the body that I was lifting heavier in to the body that I was 5 to 10 years earlier, where I was heavily engaged in disordered eating and eating disorder behaviors. So for me, it was like an aesthetic or that I was comparing myself to, like, oh, I should be able to lift this much and still be this small. And that's absolutely ridiculous, right? It's ridiculous 10 years later. But at the time, I don't know why we think we're not human. But I was like, oh, if you're not a robot, you can't perform at this level with as little fuel as you were, or as little food as you were taking in 10 years ago. That is so strange. I, for one, am shocked.
I know. I know we do it all the time. It's we just want to be hard on ourselves, right? We always want to. If we're not doing enough, and enough will always change, right? It's the same thing when you achieve some result, you know, you take 1 second to be happy for it, and then you're like, I have a new goal. And it's like, okay, well, how about be more happy with that moment? How about don't just find the next goal? Well, we have to be goal oriented, right? Everything's goal oriented. Next goal, next goal. We can't be satisfied. I feel like we always do that. That's what all this stuff is, right? Sometimes all this extra numbers is just sort of pushing us in that way to always feel like we're not enough, right? And we are enough, right? We're doing it, right? Every day you show up and you do your best, you're doing it, right? And that's the message I try and remind my athletes, anyone on Instagram. Like, you know, that's the biggest change I took in my fitness journey, was just sort of accepting that doing my best is all I can do, even if the numbers don't reflect that.
I love that. Something you said earlier about, I think the other part of the comparison is it's just a I it's the all or nothing mentality in a different costume, right? We look at our past selves, or we look at someone else and their comeback season, and we make it about us. If they did it, why can't I? You know, it's big in the fitness world. It's big in the running world. That person came back to the scene shortly after their injury. Why can't I? That person, quote unquote, bounce back. I hate that phrase, after giving birth. Why can't I? And it's so unfair to ourselves.
I mean, I don't, everyone's journey is different, right? And so, you know, I feel like that's the thing. Someone else might, time barriers, right? They always exist. Let's say, whether it's some weight or whether it's a time on a clock in a race, like we always just, we like, I want to break this 4 hours, 3.5, 3 hours, BQ, lift this weight, and someone else might do it quicker or get there in a different way than us or faster. And all of a sudden we're like, well, why couldn't we do it? They took one attempt to do it, and it's taken me seven. What am I doing wrong? And then what we don't realize is that that person who did it in one attempt maybe is stuck at a new time barrier, like 2 minutes faster, for the next 12 years. And when you finally break it, you blow right past it and you go through it, because this was a barrier for your life for many reasons, mental and physical. And comparing to someone else doesn't have any reflection on your journey, right? But we just want to see that someone else did it and we didn't. And now we're upset. And now we're questioning everything about ourselves.
I find that it often is masking, as we're alluding to, a deeper insecurity. When you're insecure about something, maybe it's related to fitness, maybe it's not. Maybe it tends to be a bigger issue than running. It's just coming up in running or coming up in exercise. You feel the need to prove your worth to the people. To the people around you, which ultimately just keeps you losing.
Yeah, I mean, proving ourselves is something we constantly do, whether it's in training, in a race, in daily life, right? We're always trying to prove that we're doing the right thing, prove that what we're doing is working. It's not what training, and in the end, that's not what training is about, right? Training is about getting more fit. It's not about proving anything. We prove it when we feel like it, when we are races or whenever we want, right? But that's not defining us. The journey is the defining factor of everything, right? The showing up, the getting more fit, the having the fun, instead of worrying about what someone else might think. It doesn't matter. Susan, who cares? Like, I'm trying to run my best and I'm trying to have a great time, and it's okay. Like, it doesn't matter if you got there quicker or slower, or, you know, you're doing double the mileage as me. I'm doing what's right for me, right? But I think sometimes there's that insecurity too in our journey of like, well, am I doing it right? How do I know, right? And that's where comparison comes in too, because if someone has the same goal as us and they're doing it differently, well, we should be doing it that way too, right?
Yeah. And you just reminded me when you mentioned Susan that there is this, if your name is Susan, this is, I just want to put this disclaimer in. This is not a direct attack on you, Susan.
We like Susans.
We love Susan. We love Susan. So let's say when I am on the nets, on the socials, there is this very small pocket of the internet of people who are sometimes causing this really internal battle in our athletes who are well-meaning and who are still stuck in the comparison trap. And they are the people who are judging others based on their pace, their ability, their bodies, and they're equating that to their fitness and their performance. And it makes running, it makes fitness inaccessible. And I don't understand what kind of high you get off of judging somebody else's pace, somebody else's finishing times, somebody else's body type, when they're out here just like you, doing their best. And it's what makes fitness should be accessible to everyone.
Yep.
So why are you trying to make it, who wins when you're making it more elitist?
Yeah, it's gatekeeping, right? I mean, people always want to keep others out. People see people having fun and they're not, so let's put them down, right? People see someone having success and they're not, so let's put them down, right? That's how people feel when it comes to everything. If someone isn't X speed, how could they be a coach? You know, how could you teach anyone how to run if you're run 10-minute miles, 11, like, that's the stuff that, it's that culture, right, of people just always feeling like, well, I can do this, so therefore I am superior to you, right? And, you know, and I don't know why, right? But I mean, I know why. It's insecurities from those people pushing it on others. But that aside, like, you know, all it does is stop people from wanting to be a part of the sport, to feeling like they don't belong. You know, it feels like a lot of people then clarify themselves as, I am an average runner or slower runner. No one's a slow runner. Like, slow or fast, it doesn't matter. Like, genetics play a huge part to running performance. Like, you know, I'll never run, you know, 2 hours in the marathon, but, you know, I don't have genetics. I don't care how hard I train, right? So am I not capable of being a runner because my genetics limit me? No. Like, but so I, you know, we just stop people from feeling like they're part of any fitness when we consider them not good enough because they're starting somewhere. And it's always where they're starting, right? Like, it's so hard to start any sport, any athletic endeavor, any fitness world, because it's so intimidating. You walk in, and even when I go to bench, I may not bench a lot. Sometimes it's maybe just the bar. I'm working my way up, but, you know, someone else has like 35 plates on all the sides, and I'm like, okay, well, but I'm starting where I'm starting, right? And that's okay. So it feels intimidating, but like, I've gotten over that to be like, okay, well, this is what I need for me, and it's okay. You know, but I don't always feel like it feels welcoming a lot of times when I'm trying my best. And I wish more people in running and other areas were more welcoming to newer people in the journey and not putting them down because they're not where, you know, some arbitrary number or time or pace or thing, you know?
Yes. Yeah, and it definitely bleeds. It's for the newer fitness enthusiasts and for the novice runners, whatever sport you're entering. But sometimes it can even get folks down who have considered themselves runners for a long time. Every time I read a comment from somebody who judges somebody's they're commenting on somebody's reel who's taking walk breaks during their run, saying real runners don't walk. I'm like,
That's
what?
ridiculous.
I'm like, Blake, you need to sign off of Instagram and visit BetterHelp, okay? Like,
It's always about toughness too. It's like, I'm tougher than you because I don't walk. It's like, I walk all the time. When I ran my PR in the marathon, I walked on my runs. I just felt like walking. It's like Forrest Gump. I just felt like running. I just felt like walking, right? Like, that's fine. I wanted to. I did it. Okay.
And it gives the same aroma as the folks who are going out for their long runs or going out for their races, and they're trying to operate on as little fuel as possible, and that being a flex for them.
I drank zero water. I ate zero gels. I ate, the grass and some pine cones, and that's how I survived on this run. And
I
why can't
smelled
you?
a
I
Gatorade. I
smell.
smelled.
I waft it. Yeah, it's always, and it's intimidating too, because sometimes you'll be on a run with someone and they'll give you a judging comment. Oh, you're taking another gel? Yeah, I'm hungry. Why wouldn't I eat this thing? Fuel is energy. Makes me faster. Fuel is a performance boost. Why would I not fuel my body? It just doesn't make any sense. Like, oh, I'm taking too many gels. I'm getting too much free energy. My bad.
Whoops, I'm sorry, I didn't want to suck today. I rode on one of our shared favorite sports dietitians in the space, Kylie. She had shared something on her Instagram recently about all of the negative impacts of not fueling your body, all of the negative health impacts, and how folks are bragging about getting to mile whatever 20 of their marathon without needing to take in any fuel or what have you. And it's for me, it's like bragging about, okay, I went 12 hours today and I didn't pee once. What? Okay. Are you okay?
It's always something they want to be better than us at. It's like,
Right.
oh, well, it's just, I don't know. It's that weirdness of life, right? Where it's like, oh, I'm better than you because I starve my body, or I walk everywhere instead of drive, or I, whatever it is, right? Like, it's okay. Everyone can do their own, everyone can live their own life, right? No one's better than anyone because they do some extreme thing that, doesn't matter in the grand scheme of it, but that you're taking as some like credo about your toughness or your masculinity or just who you are, right? And I don't know, like, I always just shrug those comments off of like, okay, like that's good for you.
Right.
I'm not gonna do that.
I want people to also remember that they have, just like we have access to viewing other folks' fitness data if they share it, you also have the ability to unfollow or mute accounts that do not serve your mental health. Whether that's a family member, a friend. I'm sorry, Aunt Linda, you are on the chopping block, okay? Don't
You've
come
been
in here
chopped.
with that diet culture nonsense, that comparison trap nonsense. You're on the chopping block. We don't want to hear about your fasted running. We're living our best fueled life here. So, in any event, I also think that's important to say that you have permission to unfollow, mute, curate your content, curate your in real life circle that best supports your mental health, because you know it's going to support your physical health. No doubt about it.
Yeah, that's social media. Like, social media is just a place for you to sort of connect with people, like-minded people, people who like can offer you some support or some positivity in a way. But it's not about like being in this hellscape where it's like everything on here triggers you and makes you sad, and you're like following all these people, but you can't unfollow them because, like, you know, you might have followed them 5 years ago and they might find out. Like, in the end of the day, it doesn't matter, right? Like, this is just a space for you, right? This is a place for you to feel better about yourself, not like hate it and then get on and just compare to every single person you see, doubt yourself, lose all confidence in your ability, and then, you know, go run your race and run terribly, because the mental side of running is the most important part of it all. And that will, you know, crush yourself when your self-esteem believes you're not good enough.
I agree. I'm with you 100% on that. I also want to make sure that we talk about, when it comes to comparison and feeling, you know, running a race or not hitting a goal, this arbitrary or what have you, it is normal to feel sad about these things. It doesn't take away from that experience that just because we're not saying if you compare yourself to your past self and to somebody else, you are wrong. And it's never going to happen. And once you've heard this podcast, you're going to be healed forever.
Disclaimer.
Right. That's just not the case. So it is so normal to be sad about a shitty race or performance or workout, because although for the majority of us, you know, unless is Eliud Kipchoge, are you with us? The majority of us are doing this for fun.
Yep.
Right. So, and we care so deeply about the activity that we're participating in. So it's normal to feel shitty about it. I think your shitty feeling has to have a time frame. Let's give it 48 hours.
That's my rule, 48 hours. But also I have 48-hour rule. You can't sign up for a race for 48 hours. Even if you had a good race, you have to like sort of like just wait to let this, because you have to celebrate the thing, right? Like too often it's like we finish and we're like, okay, I ran a great race, but I need to be 5 minutes faster. It's always 5 minutes, right? Like that's the answer to every single question of how much faster do you want to be? Unless it's like a mile, then it's probably not 5 minutes, but... You know, for a marathon, it's like, okay, I just need to be that. That's the number. 5 minutes faster, I'll be there. And, you know, so no, let's celebrate it. Like, let's take some time to celebrate our accomplishment and, you know, not compared to like everything else around us.
Right. And the accomplishment being that you worked your ass off in whatever training you took part in, you showed up for yourself and you did your best. And that, we know, is just going to look different day to day. And whether it was race day, whether it was a workout on a Tuesday, you can't control how your body is going to feel, weather conditions. I mean, everything. What is it? I think 3% maybe. That could be an overestimate. 3% is within your control. Everything else, got to let that shit go.
Yep.
Gotta let it go.
Yeah. It's like hard, right? And so we're like the comparison to our self journey, right? Like I started running in 96. In 2002, I was running some of my best times in college, but I was a 19-year-old who was living off oatmeal cream pies and, you know, all those delicious zebra cakes. That was my diet, right? And maybe some soda. I didn't know any better. I didn't know what I was doing. And, you know, I'd run the 5K and 10K in college and I ran really fast somehow. I don't know how. And then I took a lot of time off and then came back. And all I did is compare to college Nick. You know, now I'm 30 and now I'm a man. And I'm like, why can't I run the same time as I used to? And struggled for a bit because I just would constantly compare to old Nick. I need to run this time or this and that. And I knew all my splits from my college still, because you never forget any split ever in your life as a runner. And it took me a while. And then I got to 2018 and I started running faster than I did in 2002. And I had, you know, one kid, another one on the way. I was 38. I couldn't run any of the times I could in college. Like, you know, I couldn't split mile repeats as fast as I could, but I was stronger and I had a lot more going on and I was consistent and I was showing up and my effort was there. And I ended up running faster in the 5K 16 years later. and 10K and everything. And so, and then fast forward to 2024, and here I am again, two kids, even older, 42 now. And like, I can't compare to anything before because I need to be where I'm at. Like, and it's really hard to live that moment you're in. And, you know, it's easy when you just keep getting faster every year and you never take a break and your motivation never wanes. But it's also, you know, hard to have this like past version of yourself and be like, okay, well, you know, I'll never get back to that. Well, I feel like at least I did once, right? So I know I can again if I want to. And I know I can do the work, and I know it needs to look different, even again at this time in 2024. And so, you know, I think the comparison game is a lot of trust in yourself, in your journey, in doing what's right for you, and knowing you're doing what's right and listening to your body. When you have that confidence and trust in yourself, like, it can help you feel better doing the work you're doing versus thinking you're never doing enough.
Totally. I think that where we struggle is everything we're talking about today, right? Comparing, it's our own issues. It's an us problem that we have to work through.
Yep.
But I do think, and this is not a plug for hire a coach, but it is incredibly, incredibly helpful if you have the resources to have a coach on your side to kind of, I mean, not kind of, 100% support you in building that confidence, right? I do not care how fast you are. I do not care how much you identify with being slow. I do not care if you sign up for one race this year or, well, I do care if you sign up for 30 races this year. But I think that having somebody who is, it's really helpful to have somebody in your corner who is experienced, who works with more than one type of person in different stages of their lives, right? Real people, to remind you of who you are and what you should be valuing and how far, and can actually show you, do you see how far you've come in all of these areas? Why are we focusing on this small area? Yep. Like, sitting in that shit, fine, but let's get back up and let's lean into everything that we can at this point in time. So having a solid coach, or just an unbiased person in your corner is very helpful.
Yeah. You're going to, in 2016, I ran 48 races. Sometimes three in a weekend, sometimes going from one race to the other, because we were having our first child in 2017 or late 2016. I was like, my running career is over. I don't know. I was so dramatic. I am very dramatic, but I was like, I got to run every race. This is my last chance every weekend. I was just like, all right, let's find a race. Let's drive to this race. It was quite the year experience. But yeah, to your point of, you know, having a coach in your corner, no, and helping you see that perspective, right? Like, we're always stuck being our own harshest critic, right? We're always gonna think we're not good enough. So like, having someone be like, oh well, because what we'll do is we'll just compare one random workout that looks similar maybe to another workout from 2 years ago, 3 years ago, and be like, oh my god, we were 1 second slower. We're the worst. We've lost all our fitness. And then, you know, a coach can be like, well, what about all these other 23 workouts that you're doing faster and you're well above everything you've ever run? Oh no, but this one right here, this is the one. This is all that matters. And so like, we're just always gonna find that thing and just be on top of it and make it like doubt ourselves. And you know, I always see it with runners when they get to the taper, right? It's like, okay, well, I'm in the taper now, so everything should feel amazing. And the first run doesn't. And they're like, everything's wrong, I'm doomed. And it's like, okay, or like, we just need a little extra time to recover. All we need to do is be ready on race day. But, you know, we spiral quick when we get expectations for how something should feel, right? Or expectations on what it should, what numbers should be. Expectation management, right? It's a part of everything in life, from running to fitness to maybe your job and with your boss. You have to manage expectations. And in running, you're managing it with yourself, right? This is going to hurt because it's hard. And that's okay. And then you, when you have the expectations of how something should feel, it's easier when you think this will be easy because I'm now fitter than ever. And then it's hard. Okay, well, now the whole thing's going to go to shit real fast.
Yes. And off of that, I think the other expectations that we set for ourselves are based on what we're seeing other people doing, like we were talking about earlier. So one big, for me, what I see often with my clients is we actually have to re-examine what they care about. And if they're just caring about something because they see everyone else caring about that thing, or if it's something they genuinely care about.
It makes a difference. Like,
so it's like, do we care about somebody else's opinion of the race that we're signed up for? Do we care about somebody else's, do we care about what everyone, how everyone feels about the Boston Marathon enough to want to train and work really hard for it and to Boston qualify? Do we actually care about that? And I think that if we took even more than 48 hours between our highs and our lows, to assess, like, well, I actually, like, my primary goal is to have fun. My primary goal is to get to the finish line strong. My primary goal is to feel confident in my body. It's not necessarily that I want to lose weight and be smaller. It's that I want to feel strong. I want to feel capable. I want to feel like I can carry groceries across three avenues, right? That's, oh, okay. So now I see what you care about. We'll work on everything else, but let's try to focus on what your individual goals are based on where you actually, like, we want you to fall in love with the process. So if you're just looking at the finish line, as you were sharing earlier, if you're just looking at the goal and you're not process oriented, it's really easy to get lost in the sauce. So at least for me, I think that there's an opportunity for us as we mature in our fitness journey to also re-examine our beliefs.
Yeah, I think our values change, right? You know, our values when we start running, as we get older, and everything in life, right? Like, there's a lot of values I had growing up that I definitely don't have anymore. And there's new values I have that, like, I never thought I'd have, right? And so we do the same thing at running, like, we in fitness, like, we evaluate over time. And so it's not just, okay, well, I need this thing to prove my worth. I need this time to prove my worth. Everyone else is chasing it. Why am I not? What's wrong with me? You know, reevaluating your values is the best way to sort of level set yourself and to get back to the person you are versus the person that everyone else is that you're just trying to be.
I love that. I love how you ended that.
Thanks.
Do we have anything else on comparison culture, the comparison trap? Any final words, any thoughts, feelings, emotions that you want to share with Susan and Aunt Linda?
Well, yeah, I think it's good to, you know, I think the most important part of it is we all do it, right? Like, you know, as I shared, I've done it many times in my career. I have many points that I'll look back and be like, that's where I was at my best, and thinking I'll never get back there. And I did for a while. But, like, you know, whether it's other people, ourselves, other accomplishments that just the community thinks are important, it's okay to, like, have feelings around this stuff. It's also okay to evaluate yourself and say, does this really matter? Am I doing this because I want to? And also to remind yourself that, like, your fitness journey will look different as you grow up because, like we said, your values change. Maybe something else is more important or equally important in your life. So running takes a side, you know, to it, or fitness is now has a little less time. So you just smarter with your time, or you do more in that time, right? And so don't feel like you never will compare to others or to older versions of yourself. You will, but how do you react in those moments, and how do you come out of it still feeling confident? That's the journey.
I love that. It is absolutely not linear. It is 100, just like everything else in life. And we were talking about earlier, having a disordered relationship, I was sharing earlier, a disordered relationship with food and body image and weight. in no way, shape, or form is that something that has a finish line, right? It's every day you are actively working to challenge thoughts, beliefs about yourself that may be harmful to you. And I think that's where we grow. We grow the most there. And to say that you will never compare yourself to your past self ever again or to somebody else, it's just not going to happen. It's not going to happen. But now, hopefully, you're a little more equipped to respond to yourself with love and light and carbs.
All the carbs. Yes, I agree. That was well said, well spoken. It's a great way to end it. And that, I think we did it, right? We did it.
We sure did.
Yeah. And so some closing remarks. Thanks for joining us on our first episode. We love talking about this stuff. We're, you know, friends who are working together on a journey together of podcasting. And so, you know, you can find us each week on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or YouTube even. We all have video if you want to see our shining faces. I even put on hand lotion for this, so that's a big deal for me. So yeah, we hope you enjoyed it, and leave all feedback, because I think, you know, we love feedback. We always want to try and provide the best podcast we can to you guys, so all comments are always welcome.
Specifically compliments. We're not taking complaints at this time.
My ego can't handle it. Just kidding. I can handle it.
Just be nice about it, okay?
Yeah.